This is the Sex and Psychology Podcast, the sex ed you never got in school and won't get anywhere else. I am your host, Dr. Justin Lehmiller. I am a social psychologist and research fellow at the Kinsey Institute and author of the book, Tell Me What You Want, The Science of Sexual Desire and How It Can Help You Improve Your Sex Life. The ubiquity of smartphones and computers in daily life has led to a ton of changes in how we navigate the world, and that includes how we navigate sex and relationships. Our intimate lives are increasingly digital, from the rise of online dating, to internet porn and sex work, to sexting and cybersex, to telehealth sex therapy. This has undoubtedly produced some positive changes in our lives. It has helped many to find love and sexual fulfillment, to explore their fantasies, to form kinky communities, and to access vital sexual health information. At the same time, however, it has created a host of challenges, especially around issues of privacy and safety. Anytime we explore our sexuality online, we're leaving a digital trace. That nude photo or video you sent is now out there in the ether. Google, Pornhub, and Facebook know what you typed in that search bar. Your GPS knows that you went to that strip club. These are just a few of the many examples of ways that technology is collecting details on our sex lives. So, who has access to this information? And how do we keep it secure? That's what we're going to be talking about today. Specifically, how do we leverage technology to enhance our intimate lives while also maintaining privacy and security? We're also going to discuss issues surrounding artificial intelligence and sex, as well as how the move to a digital economy has created challenges for sex workers, educators, and therapists. I am joined by Stephanie Gerlich, award-winning author of The Leather Couch, Clinical Practice with Kinky Clients. Stephanie is also a certified sex therapist and a member of the teaching faculty at the University of Michigan Sexual Health Certificate Program. Her latest book is titled With Sprinkles on Top, Everything Vanilla People and Their Kinky Partners Need to Know to Communicate, Explore, and Connect. This is going to be an amazing conversation. Stick around and we're going to jump in right after the break. Are you ready to take your career to the next level and become a certified sexuality professional? The Sexual Health Alliance's certification programs are here to empower you. From sex therapists and sex educators to sex coaches and couples therapists, SHA's comprehensive and flexible programs streamline your path to certification. Learn from leading experts in the field and complete all of your necessary certification requirements in a self-paced, flexible online format. Most importantly, you'll gain the knowledge, skills, and credentials you need to excel in your field while connecting with an engaged community of professionals from around the world. Take your next step at Sexual Health Alliance. Visit sexualhealthalliance.com or check the show notes for the link. Hi, Stephanie, and welcome back to the Sex and Psychology Podcast.
Hi, thanks so much for having me. I'm so excited.
It's a pleasure to have you back here. So you're organizing a conference called Securing Sexuality, which looks at the intersection between sex and technology and how we can protect and preserve our rights and privacy as sex increasingly moves into the digital world. So tell us a little bit about the impetus for organizing this event and why you think sex and cybersecurity are such important issues to discuss.
So this whole endeavor really started the day that Dobbs ruling came out, which overturned Roe v. Wade. Most people know that I'm a sex therapist. Most people don't know that my partner is in cybersecurity. He is very, very well known in that world. And I looked at him the day that that ruling came out, and I said, a whole bunch of people in my world are about to get really, really hurt, and they don't know what they need to do to protect themselves. I said, my people need your people, and we don't know how to talk to each other. And so our initial solution was to just record a couple of podcast episodes so that people had immediate information. What do you do now that Roe is gone? And we called it Privacy in a Post-Roe America. We did two episodes. We're like, we have helped the world. People have the information they need. We're done. And that did not actually turn out to be the case, because that was just the first in many legal and legislative changes that have happened since that occurred that have really, really made people feel very scared and have dramatically altered the civil rights landscape in America, from denial of access of care for people seeking gender-affirming care, to bounties on women who are trying to, you know, have abortions, to health tracker apps that are being weaponized against people. There are just so many things happening right now that the clinical world isn't prepared for, and the security world isn't necessarily thinking about as a collective. Individual little breaches, individual little privacy violations, individual little hacks, but not thinking about it as an industry. And so what started out as what we thought was going to be literally two podcast episodes has turned into a weekly podcast where we talk about these topics, a book that's coming out next year, a series of workshops and webinars and lectures that we've done for clinicians and technologists all around the country, and now a live event in October in Detroit. We're bringing together some of the most amazing people in sort of both spheres, from mental health and from privacy advocacy, security, technology, to talk about these issues. And because we are sort of just uniquely positioned within our respective fields, we've been able to watch the news and reach out and immediately have that speaker. When the news broke that the governor of Texas was asking the Department of Transportation for a list of everybody that had changed their gender markers on their driver's license, the same day, I reached out to the executive director of the Surveillance Technology Oversight Project. And I said, this sounds like something you could explain. Would you come and talk about it? And he said, yeah, we're actually working on a white paper right now. And now he's coming in October to talk about state surveillance of trans people, to talk about state surveillance of women seeking reproductive health care. In my own practice, I'm in private practice. My electronic health provider updated their terms of service, and everybody went crazy because they were talking about using data provided by our client records to train AI and a whole bunch of stuff. And people justifiably were outraged, and they've paused those changes. But these are issues. I mean, I always joke that if I could do math, I wouldn't be a social worker, right? I'd be making six figures in technology or engineering. But we don't actually have the luxury of ignoring that world anymore, because my practice is 100% online. My clients are having driver's licenses and abortions. We're using connected sex toys. So they have become interconnected in a way that nobody ever could have predicted. And so we're trying to get out in front of that and talk about what does this mean and how do we use these technologies as safely as possible for ourselves and for our clients.
Yeah, I think you made the case for all of that very well. And there are so many different threads here worth exploring. You know, and I was thinking about some questions for you. I hadn't even thought about the whole online sex therapy world and the implications there. But yeah, if you're conducting those sessions over a platform like Zoom, and who knows what's in the terms of service for all of these things, but are these things recorded and stored somewhere? Can someone hack in and see somebody else's session and things like that? Like, there are so many different potential concerns there, including that, you know, using client data to train AI, like, just blows my mind that they would even think that they could propose that. But let's talk about some of these risks in a little bit more detail, and also some ways of staying safe online. So for every sexual interaction that you have online, there's some digital trace of it, whether that's your last porn search, those sexts that you sent your partner, or the profile that you created on that hookup app. You know, people are increasingly sharing a lot of their sexual history and their sexual lives online. And some of that information could be damaging if it fell into the wrong hands. Someone might use it to try and embarrass, threaten, or blackmail you. I mean, we've seen those things happen before. So what do we need to be doing, and what do companies need to be doing better to help ensure online privacy and security?
I think what companies need to do is fundamentally change their entire advertising model, which I don't think we're going to get them to do. There's sort of an old adage that, you know, if you're not paying for the product, you are the product. And so as long as we're using free services, they're going to be collecting data because that's how they're making money. And so to what the companies can do is fundamentally change their entire business model. And that's a big ask. What individuals can be doing, though, I think about social media, and a lot of times people don't realize just how much data is going out. I read an article recently, somebody reached out to Tinder and requested their records that Tinder had on them. And if we think about Tinder, I mean, it's not question heavy the way OkCupid is. It's you get a little paragraph and a couple of pictures, and that's about it. People don't think about it as giving over a lot of data. When they got their records from Tinder had over 800 pages of information And a lot of it was very, very personal. We're talking about their sexuality, their relationships, their fantasies. I mean, 800 pages of personal data from a Tinder profile. And we don't even always necessarily need to do the full share. If I am, you know, curious about cuckolding, and I want to know if there's a cuckolding group in my area, I can go to Facebook and I can type cuckolding into the search bar and never hit enter. Maybe I'm like, wait, I don't want my wife to see that I did this. I don't want my husband to think I'm open to this. Forget it, never mind. And you delete it. The fact that you typed that into the search bar has already been tracked and logged. You don't need to complete the search for them to now know it was something you were curious about for a minute. So there is no way to be 100% perfectly private online. Even the people that are like, I got rid of all of my social media profiles and I have no internet presence. You still have a credit report. You still have state ID. You still have health insurance records. All of that data lives online somewhere and is connected to you. So the best thing we can do, especially when it comes to sex and intimacy and online dating and relationships, is to kind of like think about it from a rack perspective, you know, risk-aware consensual kink. Think about it like risk-aware consensual tech. Like, what am I willing to risk? What would be okay with me if it got out? And then make those decisions accordingly. For some people, I have lots of friends that are professional kinksters, right? They are educators, they're performers, they're pro doms. They don't care if their niche fetishes and their nudes get leaked. My school teacher client with the morality clause in her employment contract probably does. And so it's really thinking very carefully about what your own risk profile is, what the worst case scenario of anything getting out is, and making a series of individual decisions based on that.
Yeah. And it's also thinking about all the different apps that you use and the data that are being collected in the background. You know, for example, if you have Google Maps active all the time on your phone, you know, it's essentially tracking your whereabouts at all times. And it's going to know that you went to the strip club or to that sex party, right? You know, these things are going to have a digital trace or record. And if you have microphone access turned on for social media apps, they're definitely listening in the background. You know, I can tell, and it's scary and I hate it when I have talked about something one day and then the ads that show up on Facebook the next day are exactly the things that I was just talking about. And I'm like, fuck, that's really scary because someone has access to those private conversations that you're having. And if you don't think about, you know, what are the settings that I need to apply to every single app, you're putting a lot of data and information out there that you might not realize.
And that does become a direct hit on your in real life anonymity. I used to work years ago, I was a child therapist with community mental health. I worked with extremely high risk young people. And obviously I'm not friending my clients' families on social media. But when your GPS settings are on, as you mentioned, those algorithms know, oh, you were in the same place as Justin was. And you guys were both in the same place four or five times. And you have a profile and Justin has a profile. You guys should be friends. And even without me ever doing anything, my client's parents would be suggested as friends. My clients, young people, were being suggested as friends. Now take that back to your idea of the sex party. You know, maybe I'm wearing a mask and a wig. Maybe I'm using a scene name. Maybe I am traveling out of state for this because I do have a moralities clause. If your phone and my phone are in the same place often enough, those threads will be tied. And now somebody that maybe I turned down in a club, maybe somebody that creeped me out at the club is getting me suggested as a friend. And some of these things are just ubiquitous. If I leave my phone at home, my car GPS is still there. It's funny now when I leave my synagogue after Shabbat services, when I turn on my car goes, oh, you going to the Mexican restaurant? Because we know you go to the Mexican restaurant every Friday. If, when you leave here, you go there. If you're driving out of state, if you're using a fake, like there is no way to guarantee your data is not being collected. All you can do is make the best decisions you can and mitigate risk where you can.
Yeah. So true and so scary. Now, Another risk, and this one isn't just about sex, it's about everything that we see and hear online, is that artificial intelligence and high-tech software are being used to create deepfakes. And this is used to spread political misinformation and propaganda, and in the case of sex, to create fake nude images and fake porn videos that appear to feature a specific person, often a celebrity. And deepfakes raise a lot of concerns, not just in terms of unleashing fake and harmful information, but also in terms of issues of consent. Like, you didn't consent to have your likeness or appearance used in those videos. So tell us a little bit about some of the concerns surrounding AI and sex and what we need to be thinking about to minimize and mitigate those risks.
One of the scariest things is that it goes beyond videos now. There are actually apps that will replicate your voice, your partner's voice, your friend's voice, and you can be having a conversation on the phone, or really, even if you combine the two, on Zoom, and think you're talking to one person who you are looking at and looks just like your long-distance girlfriend and who sounds just like your long-distance girlfriend and might not be at all. It is becoming increasingly difficult to know who you are interacting with online and if what content you're looking at is real and if the content you're looking at is consensual. We actually have two people coming to speak about topics related to this. We have a really amazing person in the hacker space named Johnny Christmas, who's coming to talk about securing your nudes. You know, we're all adults in the 21st century. The idea that you're never going to send a naughty pic to somebody is probably not going to happen. But, you know, how do you do that safely? What can you do to protect yourself? What can you do to mitigate risk there? And then we have Maya Brooks, who's coming to talk about systems and technologies that you can put in place to make sure that any pictures you do post are authenticated, that we can't prevent nudes or nude deepfakes from happening, but we can use technology now to watermark what's real from what's not. And she's coming to tell people how to do that, because it's not always, you know, the college kids sending the sexy sext. Sometimes it's the professional content creators who are totally fine creating erotic media, and they do want it out there, but they want it to be real and they want it to be their image and their choices. And so being able to have both of those conversations, being able to talk about how do I make sure that the content I create is mine and that people know it's me versus not me. And how do I share what I want to share intimately with the people that I care most about as safely as possible? Because it is bizarrely hard to do these days and so easy to replicate and fake.
Yeah. And, you know, something else related to this issue of artificial intelligence is, you know, we've seen this rise of facial recognition software. And, you know, in the early days, that was kind of fun on Facebook. It saved you a lot of time from having to individually tag everybody in your photos. But now it's really fucking scary because there are these programs that can search everywhere on the internet and find every place that you appear. And if someone has taken a nude or sex video of you and uploaded it somewhere, even if they didn't connect it to you, you know, by listing your name or anything, those apps can find it. So, you know, that's a whole other concern here. And something else related to what I do with podcasting, you know, I downloaded this app a while ago, back when I was editing my own shows. I don't do that anymore because it's just gotten to be way too much work and I'm not a professional sound mixer. But I downloaded this app that was supposed to help with it, and it offered this feature, I think it was called Overdub or something, where you could actually replace audio segments of speakers' voices with something mimicking their own voice. And I was like, oh, that could potentially be helpful if there was like a distortion in the audio that happened or something like that. But then I was like, nope, this is just a bad idea. We don't want to be replacing people's audio. And then, you know, that also has me thinking about all these releases that I sign whenever I do media work, where they're like, you sign away your right to, you know, have any inspection of the final product, and they can dub you and edit you to make you sound like however they want. It's like, yeah, scary stuff.
You touched on two things there that are resonating with me. I think almost more than people using those facial recognition softwares to find nudes, for me, the concern is the reverse. So many people that I work with or know will have profiles on kinky social media or kinky dating platforms, and they're not using their real name, and their location is set to Antarctica, and they're being very careful about sharing their real self. And it used to be that people would say, oh, well, you know, it's a new photo. I've only used that photo on that site. So if they put it into like Google reverse image search, nothing will come up. But because of those facial recognition softwares, that actually subverts your anonymity because they can put any picture of you in and it will pull up your Facebook profiles or your Instagrams, and it will give them other places where your face has been seen that you might not want them to have access to. And that's really scary, not only for people dating, but again, for content creators, for therapists that work with marginalized populations. We are increasingly under attack these days. And, you know, most of us try to keep our personal and our professional social media presences very separate, and those technologies subvert that.
Yep. It is so much harder to be anonymous these days in so many ways. And, you know, you're so right. There are a lot of settings, a lot of cases where people want to be anonymous, where they need to be anonymous to have a certain level of safety or feeling of security. But it's just, in this digital world, increasingly hard to do that. Now, as sex has gone online, so many sex workers and people who work in sex-related fields have gone online as well. And one of the challenges in moving into this, what is now a digital economy, is that if you work in the sex space in any way, there are all kinds of roadblocks to things like banking and getting paid for your work. So, for example, in the case of sex workers, even if you look at a culture like the Netherlands, where sex work is legal, a lot of banks will refuse to let you open an account because they just flag prostitution as a high-risk business. And sex educators and therapists who are working legally, you know, often encounter similar difficulties in financial accessibility. You know, for example, although I didn't have any problems opening up a bank account for my sex and psychology business, I am completely unable to sign up for a business Venmo account because the word sex appears in my business name. If you type it into Venmo to like set up your profile, they're like, sorry, please enter a valid business name. And I'm like, fuck you, this is a valid business name. I'm blocked from using certain financial services just because it's called sex and psychology. And then don't even get me started on like running a business in the sex space and using social media. You know, I know a bunch of sex therapists who have said that they can't advertise on Meta platforms as a sex therapist. They have to call themselves a relationship or intimacy therapist instead and, you know, speak in code to try and get around filters. So have you encountered any of these roadblocks? And do you think there's anything we can do to try and reduce some of these barriers?
Yeah. So I am among the illustrious sex therapists banned from Instagram, oddly. Instagram has banned me, but Facebook has not, which is odd because it's Meta for both. And I really hope none of them are listening and solve that problem because it's been a nice loophole. We had the same problem with the conference. We actually are permanently banned from advertising on Meta platforms. And what we had to do, which I fought so hard against because my entire model, everything I do in my practice, in my writing, in my speaking is about stigma reduction and normalization. I did not want to have to censor, but we had to compromise and we replaced the E's in SE curing and SE sexuality with threes. That let us get through. But now the way that I have justified that for myself is it goes to its own landing page that says why the threes, and it gives you a breakdown of online censorship and why this is bullshit. And then goes, now that you understand, why don't you come into our main homepage? But we do have some people that are coming in October and working directly on that. Shakun Sethi is an amazing person. She wanted to make a sex education platform. She created and founded Tickle Life. All she wanted Tickle Life to be was high quality, user-contributed sex education. And she was, to your experience, financially shut down. She was told she couldn't have an account. She was high risk. She was doing sex work. She could not get a bank account or a credit card processor to save her life. And while most people would give up, Shakun is amazing. And she went, okay, I guess I'm going to become a payment processing platform now. And she started Tickle Pay and is working specifically to support people who experience financial stigma because they are sex educators or because they are content creators. And she is coming to talk about that, to talk about the financial barriers and how to navigate that system, because there are people who have already been paid for their work. And the bank will find out after the fact, oh, you're doing that? Never mind, we're taking your account away. And they will freeze their funds and actually revoke the money they've already earned. So, you know, they say high-risk financial services are high-risk businesses, but really it's incredibly risky for anybody in the sexual health space to trust modern banks with their money. And Shakun is working actively to address that and to push back and to create alternate mechanisms for people like me and like you and everybody else that we interact with. And I think it's so exciting. I can't wait to hear more about what she's doing.
Yeah, it's such important work. And it reminds me, you know, on some of the previous study abroad courses I've taught in the Netherlands, and speaking with some of the sex workers over there as part of my course, they talked about how the sex workers banded together to basically form their own credit union so that they could, you know, have a way of banking. You know, it's really hard in a lot of industries, including like the legal weed industry here in the US, to, you know, have banks being willing to go anywhere near touching your money, because if you get deemed a high risk profession, they just close off access to it. So it's a struggle. You know, as we've moved into this very digital economy, it raises this whole other host of concerns for people who work in any way in the sexuality space, even if you're an educator or healthcare professional. It's just part of the world we live in, but a lot of it, you know, in terms of change, is going to have to come from within and us doing the work of kind of creating the alternative avenues and outlets and places where we can conduct our business safely.
And these are the conversations that we're trying to inspire, because for so long, everybody has been frustrated in their own little silo, right? And now I want to bring people together to be frustrated together and to build problems and to solution and collaborate so that we can reduce the frustration and, more importantly, the fear for so many people right now.
Yeah, let's be frustrated together. Now, I know we've talked a lot about the risks and problems, you know, in terms of managing privacy and security, but we should also acknowledge there's a lot of great things about, you know, sex and technology being increasingly integrated. For example, in terms of thinking about what are ways that technology can benefit our intimate lives, one of the first things that comes to mind for me is how it can help improve sexual communication. So there are a couple of apps that I often recommend when I give talks on sexual fantasies. One of them is called X Confessions. The other one is called Own Your Sex. And basically, they're kind of like Tinder for sexual fantasies. You and your partner each download the app, you sync your profiles, and then you take a survey and you swipe right on the things that you're into and left on the things that you aren't. And then it spits out your matches. And so it's an easy way to hone in on your shared sexual interests. And it's a really cool tool. Of course, there would be the privacy concerns and so forth in terms of who would have access to that data. But, you know, that's one way that this technology can be a good thing for our intimate life. So what are some examples that come to mind for you where there's a positive side to sex and technology?
I think there are lots of positives. I just think we need to navigate things safely, and we can balance both. I know that this is a year, especially, and a cultural climate where it's really easy to get caught up in the, well, yeah, but this is why it's risky, or, well, yeah, but this is what the dangers are. But for a lot of people, the benefits outweigh the risks, and that's okay. There are some really amazing connected sex tech toys that can be wonderful for people in long-distance relationships or people with disabilities or single people. A lot of the sex tech health space I really like. There are some great devices that are gamifying, like doing your Kegels now, where you have a little game on your phone and the device is connected and it can help get people into a health routine that they wouldn't otherwise be doing. I do like the fact that people are more comfortable communicating often digitally than they are in real life. I think that texting can be a great way to start a difficult conversation. It's so much easier to send a text or a link to a video than it is to say, sit down, I would like to tell you in great detail my fantasies, and I really hope that you return the favor when I'm done. That can feel overwhelming. But we just want to do those safely, right? We want to use an encrypted messaging platform if we're talking about our fantasies online. We want to actually read the terms of service of the apps that we're downloading and not just blindly click yes. We want to understand what we're looking for and looking at when we're reading those so we can make informed choices there. And if you're not paying for it, you are the product. So it's having that ability to know, what am I trading for access to this and how comfortable am I with that? And making an informed decision that feels right for you. It's a negotiation like anything else, and nobody can decide for you but you.
Yep. Totally agree. Now, we're running short on time. I have just one more question for you, which is whether you have any other advice that you would give people when it comes to staying safe online. You know, so any other key takeaways you'd offer in terms of how we can embrace the technology and tap into the benefits while also mitigating the risks and maintaining our privacy and security?
So one of my favorite tips is to get a USB data blocker. The hacker world calls them USB condoms, which as a sex therapist, I find hilarious. We actually had a whole bunch of these made and we gave them out at the ASEC conference this year and people were blown away. You can get them for a couple of dollars. And what it is it looks like a USB and you put it on the end of your phone charger cord and just let it live there forever. But if you've ever rented a car or borrowed your friend's laptop to charge your phone, you know, when you plug in your charger cord, it'll say, do you want to sync your phone to this device? Not all devices are ethical enough to ask you if you want to do that. And if you put a data blocker on the end of your charger cord and just let it live there, you can plug in at the airport, you can plug in at the co-working space and charge, and it'll make sure that no data comes off of your phone. And I think one of the things that has become most ubiquitous and most sort of just muscle memory for us with technology is, oh, my battery's low, I got to plug in somewhere. So this is one of the easiest, simplest, cheapest solutions to dramatically increase the safety in your life, because I know that my phone has like 98% of my life on it. And I wouldn't necessarily want everything on my phone to be in anybody else's hands. But if I can have a $5 solution that mitigates some of that risk, nothing's ever perfect, but if it can help, it's such an easy thing to do and it increases your safety everywhere you might happen to be charging or sharing a phone.
Yeah, I love that. USB condoms, and beware of those shared charging devices. There are risks and people don't think about them at all. So I appreciate you sharing all of this information today, Stephanie. Can you please tell my listeners where they can go to learn more about you and your work and get a copy of your latest book?
Yeah. So for all of my books, they can go to my author website, which is stephaniegorlick.com. My parents got creative. So it's stephaniegorlick.com. But most importantly, come and join us at the conference. And if you can't physically be there, we do have a recorded access option. So you can get all of our workshops, plenaries, keynotes recorded after the fact, sent to you. And that is securingsexuality.com, either directly like that, or if you're going through one of the meta products, you know, you can put the threes in and get my diatribe about why online censorship sucks. But securingsexuality.com. It's October 19th and 20th in Detroit. It is going to be an amazing experience. I cannot say how passionate I am about getting this information out to as many people as possible. I genuinely think for a lot of my marginalized clients, this is life and death information. For everybody else, it's just good best practices to have, because the technology is the water we swim in these days. There's no avoiding it. We might as well learn how to do it safely.
Yeah. I appreciate the work that you're doing and appreciate having you here. So thank you again for your time. And thank you to my listeners. To keep up with new episodes of this podcast, visit my website, Sex and Psychology at sexandpsychology.com, or subscribe on your favorite platform, where I hope you'll take a moment to rate and review the show. You can also follow me on the socials for daily sex research updates. I'm on Twitter at Justin Lehmiller and Instagram at Justin J. Lehmiller. Also, be sure to check out my book, Tell Me What You Want, and Stephanie's new book, With Sprinkles on Top. Thanks again for listening. Until next time.